Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
On this week's episode of Zero Block 30, we are going to talk with Tony La Russa, who is the Hall of Fame manager from the Cardinals, from the A's, from all over the place. Huge name in baseball. But he's also doing something good for the veterans, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. And that's going to be brought to you by our good friends at Simply Safe. Simply Safe helps me when I go out of town, which I've been traveling a lot because I know that my family is safe and secure. When they lock the doors at night, they know that everything's good. Like they took, for instance, it's hard to be in a house with a toddler, or not, she's not really a toddler anymore. She's damn near 6 years old, but she constantly throws shit around. And when she does that, it acts like the glass is breaking. I had another security system before that would constantly call me like, hey, we got a glass breaker. I'm like, no, she's just playing with fucking Legos for the fifth time. It's not actually a glass break. Simply Safe went above and beyond when they did that. They have a glass break test facility. They ran over 10,000 live glass break simulations, refining their detection technology. And it was so accurate, can distinguish between a broken plate and a broken window. This is the level of detail from Simply Safe puts into everything they do. Order your Simply Safe security system today at simplysafe.com/ZBT. That's simplysafe.com/ZBT. They will also donate to one family in need. That's simplysafe.com/ZBT. The I, it says simply with an I at the end. safe.com/ZBT. Let's go. Well, I've always heard that Tony was not the nicest of fellas, but he came off as a pretty nice guy.
I thought so. And, you know, obviously he's doing a very noble thing. His organization has been around for quite some time, and now for the last 6 years has been helping veterans. So I think it was great to get that out there and let people know that he's out there doing more outside of the game of baseball.
No doubt about it. Also, big news coming throughout the world. We're going to get into that a little bit later. But President Trump, doing President Trump things, and it's just like a constant assault on social media. Like everywhere you look, it's almost impossible to escape the news. Even if you don't want to see it, it's everywhere.
Right.
It's everywhere.
Right.
Yeah, and even a lot of Republicans now who have been outspoken Trump supporters are speaking out and saying, let's see.
Well, we'll get to that. Yeah. Because first things first, I have to talk to you two. You did a field trip with our pal Large to Brooklyn.
Yes.
And my God, I didn't realize that neither of you have any culture. Speaking...
Octopus wigglers.
Yes, yeah, seriously.
That's what I call calamari.
Calamari and octopus wigglers. I couldn't believe it.
Well, in our defense, whenever we posted the Twitter poll on High Haters...
Yep.
Like 80% of the country
calls
it calamari.
Yeah, most people do call it calamari, but you know, if you're from this area, it's calamari.
If you're from Brooklyn, you gotta say it that way.
Well, in Brooklyn, Jersey, New York, it's calamari.
Whatever.
I had no idea what the fuck he was even talking
about.
Oh,
I bet. If you've never heard that before, yeah, that's
a shock. He's like, do you want to go eat calamari? I was like, sure. I don't know what that is, but I'm down. And then it comes out, I'm like, this is fucking calamari, dude. What the fuck are you talking about?
When we were down in Coney Island the day before, we had been in Brooklyn, and we get out of our cab and we're walking down the street, and this huge like white Buddha guy was sitting on his stoop like with a wife beater on, and he said, somebody walked by, he was like, fuck you, and I was like, yeah, Brooklyn. Like I love, like when you go somewhere and you hear that stereotypical accent that you wanted to hear.
Yeah,
like I was at a Boston ice hockey game and somebody said wicked next to me, and I was like, all right, like mark it off the list. But wait a minute.
I imagine,
but
it's just like type that whenever that happens, they say wicked, you pull out your iPhone, you need to make an Instagram story. Like, can you say wicked again? I want to get it up.
Yeah. I need to document.
No, but it's just like the military, when you introduce yourself and you meet people from other parts of the country and you really get exposed to different cultures. I thought it was so interesting. Like, I remember the first time I was down in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and guys kept raving about this Italian restaurant and these meatball subs. So I go, I'm like, okay, well, we'll see what's up. And then I get this sandwich that is just runny outside the bread. It's crappy bread. There's lettuce and tomato on it. I'm like, this is not a meatball sub. What are you talking about?
So, yeah. You got real bros. Speaking of, yeah. though,
what's up?
You.
What are you talking about? Hey, hey, I'm working here.
Fuck you. But you had quite the weekend.
Yes, I did.
I've been meaning to ask you about that.
Yeah, I was up at, Chaps, cover your ears. I was up at West Point with all my Army football brothers. We have an
West
annual.
West Point. Ugh.
That's kind of like your crowd. Like,
yeah.
Also brought to you by West Point.
Yeah. We had our annual Army football alumni golf outing, and it's just, I'd imagine it's the same as if you guys got together with your old Marines and just all the old stories start coming back, and it's just a lot of laughs, and you know, you share a unique experience with someone, so you're really going to enjoy your time. And then I think one of the coolest parts about playing golf at West Point during the summer months is when all the training is going on. So I am not exaggerating one bit. There were no less than 15 or 20 flyovers by Chinooks or Blackhawks during our round that were just shuttling cadets back and forth from training. And then you hear small arms fire, you hear machine gun fire, you hear artillery landing. You're like, yep, I'm back at West Point.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really cool.
Really, definitely cool. Good.
That would suck, though, if you're like about to have a career round and whenever you do it, a big boom goes off and there's no mulligans on the range, no matter where you're at.
Yeah, it's like, no, but it's like, in, you know, the Happy Gilmore, you got to freaking Chinook hovering overhead. How the hell am I supposed to chip with that going on, Doug?
Could you guys keep it down over there? We're trying to putt.
But no, it was a fun weekend.
That's really cool. That reminds me of like on Camp Pendleton on the beach there. You're just laying on the beach on your towel and there's like tanks going by. And what are they? AMRAPs?
AMRAPs?
No. They're like the tanks that go in the water.
The amphibious ones?
Yeah. You ain't tracks. The track vehicles. You ain't tracks. You ain't shit. That was on their building.
I love watching those videos of those dudes going like 40 miles an hour just flying into the water.
Yeah.
That's got to be scary your first time.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Crazy. I always wanted to ride on one of those hovercrafts.
That would be pretty cool, probably.
Yeah. I saw like twice when I was stationed out in Pendleton going over the water. Can you imagine like rolling up to a dock bar in that thing? You crush.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I used to want. This you remember, old thing? Oh, yeah. I think this? It was like late 80s, early 90s where hovercraft toys became a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you remember that?
Yes, and they had like little.
I used to want one of those so damn bad.
Right.
But they were so expensive, and my parents knew that I would destroy it within like an hour.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well. You should get yourself one now.
I should.
That's the great thing about being an adult. Like
that was actually my shoe philosophy too, that right, I wanted to buy shoes of ones that I couldn't afford whenever I was younger.
Yeah, because so you walk around like the Sean Kemps.
Or like British Knights, like the Patrick Ewings. I've been looking for it was a feeler shoe by Jamal Mashburn that I used to want. And I remember looking around at like different outlet malls for it in St. Augustine, Florida. I could never find it, and I always wanted the Jamal Mashburn. So if you have the Jamal Mashburn hookup, let me know. Kate and I are going out to San Francisco tomorrow morning because we are going to go to the Rugby Sevens, and that trip is being done because
be Friday. So
yes,
we'll have
that's
already
right.
gone.
That's right. Oh, no, so we're going
maybe.
Saturday.
Maybe we'll, do a, oh. maybe we'll do an early release for the people of ZPT.
Ooh,
maybe we'll do an early release. But buying tickets can be complicated, confusing, but there's a simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to get tickets to every single type of live event, like the Rugby Sevens, where we'll be going on Saturday. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, just a few taps. I can instantly find seats. I actually just used them to get our tickets, me, Kate, and Bren, to go to the Rugby Sevens. It was easy. It took like 2 minutes. And they have this thing where it's like green. You don't even have to scroll anymore. Like, you just look for the brightest color green on your SeatGeek app, and it tells you the best value. And there's ones that are red, and I looked at it, and like, SeatGeek is basically like, you dumb motherfucker, do not buy this seat. These seats are way overpriced. But they look like in the great spot, because where it was essentially the 50-yard line of the rugby game.
Yeah.
But that would be nice. Luckily, it was red, because my dumbass would have bought that. For sure. Mm-hmm. But now I'm not going to get screwed because my good friends at SeatGeek. If you want to use SeatGeek, it's the first time. Just download the app, enter the promo code CHAPS today. That's promo code CHAPS, and you're going to get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And like our friends at Part of My Take say, that's like us buying you your first beer. So you're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
You are welcome.
Love SeatGeek.
Let's go to the interview with Tony Russo. And Danny too.
We have now with us on Zero Blog 30, very special guests who need no introduction, really. I won't even bother with it. We have Tony La Russa and Danny Kimbrell. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, thank you. Very good.
Good, good. So, you know, Mr. La Russa, I'm not really sure how to address you, whether it's Mr. La Russa, Tony, Skip. What do you usually go by these days for someone who's never met you?
Well, it's not Mr., because that's my dad, so you can you can pick Skip or Tony. It's your pleasure.
Okay, you know, because, you know, having played sports through college, you know, it's just one of those things where most coaches just always go by coach. So I wasn't sure what it was in baseball if you guys just always go by Skip. So I don't want to disrespect, but I'm going to go with Skip just because I like that.
All right.
So, Skip, we have you today because you have a very special initiative that is close to our hearts, as you will be helping out veterans through the Animal Rescue Foundation. And let's start by seeing, what is the Animal Rescue Foundation, and what was the impetus to start that?
Impetus comes from my wife, Elaine, and our daughters, Bianca and Devin. We've always been particularly passionate about companion animals, and once you learn that they're being euthanized, you think, hey, what can we do to help? A local nonprofit is one of the things. So way back in February of 91, we started ARF. My wife came with that cute, you know, catchy ARF, Animal Rescue Foundation. 27 years later, we're still going and going strong. One of the things that we have done is, besides rescuing them, we use the animals with their special unconditional love, magical kind of therapy to affect people with needs. And right away, when the veterans issue came up, we were realizing how many veterans are going to come back from the Near East and Middle East, rather, with issues. We thought one of the ways that we could help would be to provide a companion animal. One of the things is all our companion animals are dead when being euthanized, so we do literally rescue them, put them with a veteran, help them through their tough times. We do it for no cost.
And what was your what was your connection with the military? Why did you pick the military as their target for to help?
Well, I was a 3F because of my issues, physical issues. But probably the number one motivation was the 60s, when we were so disrespectful to the Vietnam veterans and how unappreciative we were for their service. And here we are in our times. It's 180 degrees in a different direction. We understand. We respect. We're concerned. The suicide rate, the issues, they come back trying to reorient themselves to the world. And we were part of discussions, by the way, with groups that, you know, housing, employment, education. And we said dogs, because the frame of mind is where the issues very often come from. And we started the program 6 years ago. It's been very successful, and we're on the edge of expanding it into the, you know, across the country. And that's why a supporter of ours for years has been Purina. Dog Chow has been known for being involved with the military. So this Service Dog Salute that runs until Veterans Day is a very unique opportunity to honor the veterans and for us to help them, because Dog Chow's come with this $500,000 potential contribution. If we can earn it two ways, you can buy a specially marked bag at the stores around the country. A portion of the proceeds come to us. The other one that I think is getting the biggest hit, since it came out a few days ago, there's a video produced by Dog Chow and BuzzFeed. And the way you go and look at it is dogchow.com/service. The beauty of it is, one, you'll understand totally what Pets and Vets is about. The other one is, for every time it's shared, a dollar goes into the pot. And if we get enough shares, we'll get that money. I think I mentioned our program. There's a no cost to the veterans. The key is our training. Danny is here, and he can explain, you know, why we're so why he's so successful with putting together veterans with the dogs.
All right, Danny. So I don't know if you know this or not, but I was a dog handler for 10 years in the Marine Corps. And I actually taught. Awesome. I was the lead Marine instructor at the canine school. So I don't want no bullshit now. Shoot it to me straight. What?
Yeah. No. So a big part of what I do is I train the veterans to train the dogs themselves. I'm a veteran myself, so I use the same way that you were trained, same way I was trained to train them, to train their dogs. That's using that familiar formula that we learned from the military. the dogs go through basics, intermediate, service skills, public access, and American and kennel clubs, canine good citizen test. We have the test done by a third party, so there's no bias on our part. And the dogs are trained in at least three skills that help alleviate disability, ranging from anywhere from alerting the panic attack and interfering with said panic attack to waking up from nightmares and more.
Wow. And Danny, you know, when you think about rescue dogs, you think about all different types of breeds that, you know, might have suffered from abuse, neglect, what have you. How is it difficult to deal with dogs that are dogs and cats that are off the street and, you know, could be any number of different breeds?
So our process of selection is extremely high standard. Just from the ARF select dogs selected from ARF are already high quality dogs. And then what I do is I get to pick from the cream of the crop. To find dogs that would best work as service dogs. And I don't look at breed at all. I'm purely looking at their behavior. That's it.
So what kind of behavior markers do you look for?
Well, I'm looking for a dog that associates well with people, seeks attention, but isn't like so hard for it that they do undesired behaviors. I'm looking for a dog that's food motivated, but not so food motivated that they would, you know, jump on the counter and eat everything that's up there.
Food motivated, but not food aggressive.
Yeah, exactly. It's. I also test to make sure there's not a lot of fear in the dog, so I create multiple scenarios and test the dog's reaction to that. And I'm looking for a good baseline of neutral for the most part.
Have you partnered with many organizations that let you go in and, like, say, for instance, like going to a sports stadium where Skip would have been, like, to go watch a baseball game? Because I know that's a big issue with a lot of veterans who struggle with PTSD is going into incredibly crowd-rich spots. Have you partnered with anybody who lets you do that?
So we were just at Bark at the Park, which Tony helped organize, and we had a lot of our veterans there that participated in it. And then we have, once a year, we have a dinner slash recertification.
Nice. All right, Skip. So we were talking earlier, of all the years that you coached and all the players that you coached, if you had to take one of those players and say, you know what, you're actually not going to be a ball player, I think you would be a great Marine, what player do you think you would pick?
I think probably the one that I would pick was a Marine, and he was a player when I was a player, but I had a uniform, I was a lousy player. His name is Dave Duncan.
Okay.
He was in the Marine, the Reserves. He was our pitching coach for 29 years. He had a 10-year career as an outstanding catcher, but Dunk had that Marine mentality where, you know, a lot of integrity, a lot of commitment, a lot of accountability to his we call them teammates, but, you know, the people in the military with him. And he's also very tough, wasn't afraid of anything. Look at me.
Now, I always think of, for your former players, I would say that Mark McGuire, just because he's so big, he would have been a great machine gunner. You could just give him everything and he could carry it.
I think Mark would scare you with his appearance. But he's really kind of a teddy bear. And it's one of those, like, these hulks that walk around and you go, boom! Mark would go, oh, wait a minute. No, he's a sweetheart. Dunk, his nickname when he played was the Quiet Assassin. So I picked Dunk and Mark. As a really beautiful friend, who's a big guy, but he's got a big heart to match. So, you know, it's a great opportunity, fellas. I mean, sometimes you don't get thanked enough, but getting the message out about what Dog Child's doing with his service dog salute, can't thank you enough. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate you coming on. Tony's a busy fella. You can tell that they're busy guys. But going in 1991 and having that, and I will admit, when we got the prep sheet that Tony wanted to come on the show, I didn't put ARF together as ARF because I was just saying the initials until I read it out loud this morning to myself. I was like, all right, he's with ARF. And I was like, oh, it's a dog organization named ARF.
That makes sense. That checks out.
Yeah.
I actually, in my research, I found, and he didn't mention this, but he said the impetus was his wife that started the organization. But if you remember, there's a really famous clip from 1990 A's game where there was a stray cat that ran on the field, and he was the one ultimately that captured the cat and took care of it and realized, okay, there's no place I can bring this cat that isn't going to just kill it. So I think that was the story that brought home to his wife, and his wife said, all right, we got to do something. And then ARF was born.
All right, so let's get into the big news event of the week, which is President Trump's meeting with Vladimir Putin. I think
Well, hold on. I just want to explain to Kate. Like, so I tried to avoid as much on Twitter and reading about this as possible because I wanted to try something new. I wanted to try to see what my opinion of this situation might be if I just hear all the facts from Chaps first. So we'll see how that goes.
All right. Break it down for us, Chapsy. What happened?
As you know, the president has been under investigation for possibly colluding, and he has been outspoken in the fact that there is no colluding on his part or the part of his campaign with Russia. So naturally, because he's under investigation, people have a lot of eyes on when he's going to meet with Vladimir Putin one-on-one, which is partly the issue. Like, I think that meeting one-on-one is a mistake in a lot of different settings. For example, if you're going to meet with another business, you don't want to meet one-on-one because you can have backbiting. Who said what? Especially when there's a language barrier. Having Vladimir Putin speaks English, but President Trump obviously doesn't speak Russian. So you're relying on translators to get the tone and the impetus down on what they want to say. So I think going in there without your State Department, with going in there without his Secretary of State, going in there without the Secretary of Defense, going in there without many of the large players who should be doing policy, like the National Defense, like your National Security Advisor, all those people should be in the room whenever you're talking. Right. At least some of them. One-on-one is a mistake when you're under investigation for colluding. It's not a good look.
Definitely. And when you're talking about interpreters, you guys know, I was always blown away in Iraq when someone would speak what seemed like three paragraphs worth of words. And I said, okay, what'd he say? And he says, hey, how are you? It's like, said a lot more than that. Come on. What else is he saying? And obviously I can't dispute that because I don't speak the language. So I agree with you, Chaps. You definitely need a lot more people in that room.
And imagine being President Trump's interpreter because he speaks in word salads like a lot.
Right, yeah.
Where it's very choppy, breaking that down into Russian. It actually might come off really well in Russian because I took Russian in college and they speak very choppy too. There's not a whole lot of beautiful, like going through complex compound sentences or anything like that. It's pretty direct and to the point on how they speak. So his language skills might overlap pretty well. But anyway, so they come out in the joint presser and this is the issue. And I want to address it from like a military perspective. Connor, you know that if your soldiers fuck up and you're standing in front of another company commander and you're giving like a joint statement of the two companies within a battalion, are you addressing the fact that your soldier fucked up in front of the other company commander?
No, definitely not.
I think that's the main issue that I have. Even if President Trump does think that the intelligence community is wrong, which that's fine. They have been wrong. They were wrong with weapons of mass destruction. Yes. They've been wrong before. To act like the U.S. intelligence agencies are completely infallible is a fallacy. That's just not true. They have fucked up many times in the past. But you don't stand there against one of your rivals on the world stage and openly say how much they screwed up and it was our intelligence agency's fault. That they were wrong about it. You just don't do that.
Okay, so if that's the case, then no, I don't support that at all. I don't support that approach because no matter what, I mean, I'm such a team guy when it comes to just about anything, whether it's the military, sports, here, now, whatever. Even if I disagree, I'll never publicly say that. to anybody, because you never want to throw your guys under the bus. You never want to be the one to admit to that wrongdoing. So I do definitely take issue with, with President Trump if he's speaking ill of our intelligence community in a public forum.
Yeah, it's just a bad look. So he's suggesting that he believes Putin's denial over, you know, everything the U.S. Intelligence and the Justice Department has said. And that's, it's just such a bad look, especially when you're under investigation for Russia having involvement in the 2016 presidential election. And even if they did in favor of you, if you are
on the heels of the indictment, too.
on the heels of the indictment,
12 people getting indicted,
and looking into the financial ties between some of Trump's associates and the Kremlin, like, it's just such a bad look. And to me, it's such a slap in the face to our country. I mean, I just looking at the things like Putin's administration has done to put ourselves on the same footing, to compare us on the same footing as them. I mean, it's just, I don't know, but there's a lot of Republicans now. Of course, Senator John McCain, who's always been,
he's always been very outspoken against them.
He said it was one of the most disgraceful performances by an American president in history. The Republican Ben Sasse from Nebraska called it bizarre. Jeff Flake said it was shameful. Lindsey Graham said it was a bad day for the U.S. And then Bob Corker, a Republican from Tennessee, said this was a very good day for President Putin. So now people, even Fox News has come out. They all day yesterday, they're like, yeah, that was pretty bad.
Why does
those five names of the senators you just listed have been largely like on the record of going against. I feel like this is a type of situation where you need more people to come out and be like, no, dude, you can't do this. A censure doesn't really mean anything in the large run. But if you can sit there and you can honestly say to yourself, this was a good move by President Trump, I don't know what's going on in your brain at that point. I think you're just so far partisan that you can't. Because I've tried to be like, if there's certain things that Trump did was good, blah, blah, blah. This is objectively bad.
Is anyone
objectively bad?
Yeah, I agree with you. Is there anyone on the right side who's trying to spin this and say, well, you know, because maybe people are saying, well, we applaud the fact that he's trying to go speak to him and bridge that gap.
John Cornyn is probably the closest to being there. He's just basically saying that the American people voted for President Trump, so we should support him in his endeavors, even though he does things in a different way.
We should not blindly support him. I don't think that's true.
No, I mean, you blindly support the president, and you don't. And it's such horseshit from a guy like Corin, who says that now that this guy is in the office, we should blindly support the office of the presidency when he was openly and outspoken against President Obama. If you're going to have that respect the office of the presidency thing, you need to have it on both sides.
I agree.
You need to do it no matter who's in office.
And
you shouldn't do that. You should not just blindly accept what the president says no matter what. I shit on President Obama all the time because he pussyfooted around. His entire first 4 years were fucking trash.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But so, okay, and going one step further on objecting things that he's saying, granted, it's very evident that President Trump is a wild card, so who knows what's going to come out of his mouth, even if he is brief beforehand on things to say and things to avoid. But how is there not somebody in his room, in his cabinet, on his team saying, hey, if you're going to go meet with him in Helsinki, that's one thing, but these are the things we do not want to say. There's got to be somebody who knows that this is a bad look within his cabinet or on his team.
I think there has been. I mean, there's like Tillerson would do that from time to time when he was Secretary of State. He's no longer Secretary of State. H.R. McMaster was known to do that and give him the lowdown skinny. He's not doing that. John Bolton, one of the biggest things about John Bolton when he was hired is that people were nervous that he was too much of a yes man to be President Trump's foil. And now since Bolton has taken over, he has met with not only President Putin, but Kim. He's met with Kim Jong-un. Those are probably mistakes. I think you meeting with two of the largest propaganda machines in the world in North Korea and Russia and meeting with them with the U.S. flag on par with both the Russian flag and the North Korean flag is not great to do with the two strongest propaganda machines in the world.
I agree with that to an extent. I would say that I would like to see that the relationship between both North Korea and Russia and the United States is at a place where we don't have to worry that something crazy might happen. If it's, I'm not saying they need to sit in a room and be best buddies, but if they can keep them at bay and keep them in a position where we don't have to worry that they're going to do something crazy, I think
that's
a
positive.
But
are they at bay whenever you're actively investigating the fact that Russia put incredible resources into hacking our elections? Now, you might say that they didn't hack any machines and got it down, but there's a reason why polls shifted so strongly after President Trump called for Russia to hack the DNC and hack Hillary Clinton's emails, and they came out, and then everything started to come into place. I mean, they might not have changed any actual votes, but indicting 12 people for attempting, and all 17 intelligence agencies saying that they did sway the election in some way, they hacked into our like Facebooks and did all kinds of counterintelligence shit, that happened.
Well, so we just indicted 12 members of Russian intelligence services, and we just arrested her code name was Maria, but that Butina woman who, you know, she's a spy. Like she infiltrated her way in, yeah, and was as trying to have as much influence as she could. And so, yeah, I don't know.
Our right leaders on like in the NRA being at different shit, the NRA in Moscow. I mean, all those people who are out super outspoken on the far right. And I don't think if you're a conservative, like that means that you are like complicit. But there is definitely, if you're on the far right end of either side, if you're on the far end of either side, you're pretty fucked up. But I think that you, if you are a conservative with a brain, you've got to say that yesterday's or whatever day it was that you're listening to it, the meeting with President Putin was a huge mistake, and the U.S. lost ground. And to give like a Japanese version, they lost face. Like we lost face in the international community. Yeah.
Well, I agree with all you're saying, and maybe I think keeping Russia at bay, it doesn't necessarily have to be meeting with Putin. I think there's other ways to do that. And it, you know, quite honestly, it could be the fact that we are going so far in this investigation to get to the bottom of it to see how much they were influencing the election. I do think that is part of keeping them at bay to fully understand their involvement so that in the future we can prevent that.
I agree with that. If the leader of the free world is also saying that this isn't a witch hunt, it's a fake investigation, when you're doing all these things to keep them at bay and President Trump is saying in front of the world all of this shit is fake.
Yeah, that's
it contradicts it. I agree, it contradicts it. But you know, it's just I think possibly he does have too many yes men around him, so he probably thought this was a good idea and he had enough people to say, yeah, that's a good idea, go ahead and do that. I've never worked for President Trump, but I suspect, just from what I know and working with people that I think share similar traits, he's the type of guy where if you stand up to him, right away his immediate reaction is, no, you're wrong, I'm right. And if you cower to that, he will just dismiss you completely. But if you then double down on your stance and say, well, no, actually, Mr. President, you're wrong, he then will respect you. So hopefully he's got somebody, maybe it's Pompeo, maybe he has somebody that has doubled down and said, okay, now you need to listen to what I'm saying.
Both of those meetings happened with Pompeo, too.
No, that's
all right.
Yeah, so maybe it's not Pompeo.
I think it's a giant conspiracy theory and everyone is Russian and we're doomed.
No, sorry. So, chaps, maybe the answer is he doesn't have anyone. My point being is that maybe he doesn't have anyone in his cabinet, and that's why we see these meetings continuing to happen.
Come on, Mattis. Get in his face. Where are you at?
Seriously.
What are you doing, Mad Dog?
Wake
up. What
the fuck is he doing?
I know.
Like, Mattis won't even come out. Like, grow some fucking nuts, dude. Never in my life a year ago that I'd ever think I'd be like, Mattis, say something publicly, dude.
Yeah, I'm on the verge.
He has nothing to lose.
I'm on the verge of getting rid of my Mattis tank top and candle. I'm going
to
do it.
I'm about to erase my fucking Mattis tattoo.
Yeah. My goodness. Well, I think we figured it out. Don't you think, gang?
Yeah.
I think so.
And if you haven't figured that out and you want to figure out machining and auto stuff, you should try it out with our friends at the School of Automotive and Machinists and Technology, SAMTEC, which is based in Houston, Texas. It's a fully accredited trade school. If you've ever wanted to work in NASCAR, NHRA, IndyCar, or learn more about engines for Boeing, General Motors, or Toyota, you need to visit samtech.edu/CBT. SAMTEC has been an industry leader since 1985, training listeners like you to do more than just change brake pads and oil. This is the real deal, building, machining, and working on engines for some of the biggest companies in the world. SAMTEC offers courses in block machining, cinder block head machining, CNC machining, EFI calibration. In less than a year, Samtech can help you get started on the careers of your dreams. Samtech offers you associate's degree of applied science. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. Visit samtech.edu/zbt for more information or follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at samtech.edu. That's samtech.edu/zbt to sign up today. And the people who work there are fucking nice as hell. Like when I talked to them on the phone, they were so nice. So if you're like trying to get going with your GI Bill and using that in an appropriate way, like to get your money for the for BAH and all that shit you rate, that's a good spot to do it because not everybody needs to go get a degree in like anthropology. Like you can go and do something like a trade school that actually is going to benefit you. And I think that a lot of people who get out of the military would love the type of education that they provide.
Well, I don't know anything about that kind of stuff, but I follow them on Twitter and they do really cool stuff. Like they're out at they're like really hands-on. It looks like they are always really involved with their students, but yeah, I'm a big fan of them. It's cool to follow them.
Yeah, they seem really nice. Let's move on to talking about, what are we talking about now? Okay, so there's an ensign who commissions her 63-year-old father. What's that about, Con?
Pretty cool. I saw it was on militarytimes.com, an interesting story that Tyrone Krause, he was commissioned last Friday at Naval Station Norfolk at the ripe age of 63. Typically, officers are a tad bit younger.
Yes.
When they are commissioned.
Yep.
He was the chief of cardiothoracic surgery at Jersey City Medical Center. He was commissioned as a commander after the Navy determined his 24 years of experience as a heart surgeon warranted a rank that typically takes 16 to 20 years to attain. What made the commissioning experience special was the officer who swore him in was his own 27-year-old daughter, Ensign Laura Krause, who serves aboard the Ramage at Naval Station Norfolk. And the younger Krause then became the first officer her father saluted. So pretty interesting story that this guy has all this experience, and now he's saying, you know, I feel young, and I feel like I can lend my knowledge and expertise to young Navy surgeons. So
now this thing was fucked up in military customs.
Why?
Because if she commissioned him and he became a commander, she should have commissioned him, and then she should have saluted him, not the opposite way.
Yes. That's
because he would outrank her.
Right. He would never salute down to her.
But
correct.
She pulled a power move, I think. It was like, you're still boot. You're still new.
Yeah. She definitely is calling him boot.
Well, this
okay.
Made
you
me...
might got promoted. Did you have those, Kate, whenever you were like a young corporal or lance corporal? Like you had salty ass lance corporals that had stuck around, like, oh, you might be a corporal, but you're still a boot.
Yes. Yeah.
Those are the worst.
Absolutely.
Like, don't blame me because you didn't get promoted, you fucking loser.
This sent me down like a little bit of a rabbit hole, and I was looking up.
Oh, shocker. Ain't in a rabbit hole.
I'm in a rabbit hole as usual. I guess in this show we'll call it a foxhole.
There we go.
But parents and kids who serve together kind of thing, because it's not that.
I would say it's definitely not common.
No, it's not super common. One of them was Theodore Roosevelt Jr. He was a general, and him and his son went into D-Day together. Patton and his son.
That's another.
Listen to this
son
one. I didn't know this one. Richard B. Fitzgibbon Jr. and Richard B. Fitzgibbon III. So Tech Sergeant Richard Fitzgibbon Jr. was the first American killed in the Vietnam War. Years later, Lance Corporal Richard Fitzgibbon, his son, was also killed in action.
That stinks.
They are one of three father and son duos that both lost their lives in the Vietnam War.
Wow.
Holy crap. That's I never crazy. Heard that before. I didn't know that. But there's a whole list here dating back to the Civil War with like cool examples and stuff.
That's interesting for sure.
Could you serve with your parents?
That was going to be my question to you guys. Do you think you would want to serve with your parents? And if so, would you need to outrank them?
I absolutely would not want to because my dad was a fucking idiot. So,
all right. Well, what about your mom?
My mom probably wouldn't cut it. I don't think, and she listens, so she's gonna be pissed about me saying that. But I don't think she would. I don't think she could be like mean or angry at anybody. She's far too nice to be like in a leadership position like that.
Right. Right.
Oh, my parents would crush it, man. Yeah, my mom would absolutely be an officer. She would have everything. She's like the most organized person I've ever met in my entire life.
Yeah.
So she would be crushing it in that regard. And She's the nicest person in the world, but don't fucks
right
with Mrs. M. She will, yeah. So, and then my dad would be like the goofy, fun, older enlisted guy. Like,
yes.
I feel like he would be great.
Master Sergeant Joe.
Yeah, Master Sergeant Joe. Every now and then he'd break, what is it, fraternization, to have a couple beers with you in the smoke pit. Like,
yeah.
he'd be great. Yeah, I don't know.
I think
hey, devil dogs, full circle on me.
Yeah,
real quick.
He would use so much jargon. It would be incredible. Yeah.
I think my parents would follow the same path. My mom would be an excellent officer. She is wildly organized.
Mm-hmm.
She's sweet, but do not mess with her because she will jack you up. And then, yeah, my dad would be an older enlisted guy who's going to sit and smoke cigars and drink beers with the officers and tell you stories about the days of old when he used to do it.
Absolutely. Our dads would probably play golf.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, okay. So I guess we just got to commission all of our parents now.
All right. How do we do that? Does anyone know? First step. Does that mean we have to go back in? I don't know.
I guess so. Maybe. I don't know.
Hard
yeah,
pass.
But I think that the biggest issue if we did it to them now is that most of our parents, I mean, not to shit them on or anything, but they're a little bit older. And I feel like the racks at boot camp would be a big problem because it's not like they're sleeping on comfort like a Lisa mattress, which gives you a quality night's sleep and helps you recover from distractions faster, prevent burnouts, make better decisions, improve your memory, and overall make fewer mistakes. It's not marketing, it's science. To design a better mattress, Lisa has leveraged 30 plus years of experience on hundreds of hours of testing to develop the perfect mattress for all body shapes and sizes. Lisa's mission is to provide a better night's sleep for everybody through their 110 program. They donate one mattress for every 10 they sell. That's more than 26,000 mattresses and counting. Lisa strives to leave the world a better place than they found it, but that doesn't stop with the mattress donations. Together with the Arbor Day Foundation, Lisa plants one tree for every mattress they sell and are committed to planting 1 million trees by 2025. Don't miss these summer savings. Get $160. I think that's the most we've ever had.
Yeah,
$160. That's a lot, dude. Get $160 off a Lisa mattress at lisa.com/barstool.
So we
and my entire house is basically outfitted in Lisa mattresses at this point.
I need one.
The whole squad. Yeah, you and fucking Radio Brent should have got
made the PCS move.
I'm sleeping on an air mattress right now. That's what I'm rolling with. I need a Lisa
just
mattress.
Just toss your fucking old mattress over the wall like it's a tasty cake at Bastille Day.
And get a. And actually, this mattress talk, we were talking about our parents. My little nephew, he.
We're talking about fucking now or no?
Oh, no, no, no. No. Anyway.
Not quite, chaps. Not quite, buddy.
No, I was going to say my nephew is like obsessed with the military. He's like kindergarten age. And for whatever reason, he's like has little books about the Civil War. And whenever they travel somewhere, they stop at like different battlegrounds. And he's just super into it. He has I was playing with him with the little things. He's like, up here's Bunker Hill. And here's where like he knows more stuff than I do. And he slept. They do sleepovers on Navy ships.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen where they have like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, blah, blah. And so twice now my dad has because he always asks my dad because my dad's into history stuff, too. So for his birthday, they had Tighe's Battleship Bash. He spent the night on the USS North Carolina.
That's pretty cool.
And then they just spent the night on the USS New Jersey, which sounds cool. But my dad's like, great, buddy. Yeah, cool. Like, he's going to have to sleep on this Navy ship on this little tiny thing. And, you know, when you're older and blah, blah, blah. But I think it's cool that they do that stuff. We should do.
I would do it because I've never really been on a Navy ship.
It looks miserable.
It looks absolutely.
My uncle was telling me about like storerooms back in the day. I'm sure it still is that way. Can you imagine the person above you getting sick? Like, oh, I would just, I don't know if I could do it.
Are the officers'
but the
quarters any
better?
Part
that's awesome is a little bit,
yes.
Yeah.
All right, well, then I'll stay there. You guys can stay with the.
We're screwed.
Yeah.
But the part that's good is when you're actually out at sea, you don't have any of the city pollution. So you see so many more stars. You see
shit,
which makes it so much better. But I do think that the rough seas that they have to deal with all the time. And you just hit your head. I mean, I think that they should institute a new rule that if you're in the Navy, you should be like 5'6" or shorter. So you can go on the boat.
Wouldn't that be terrifying too?
Oh, man.
Right.
If you just had like a bunch of short little stout guys that are running through like,
yeah, absolutely.
The lollipop kids. The lollipop kids.
I think that would be good. Shock and awe.
Oh, so last night on High Haters, we talked about a game. Let's do it for military. This is off the cuff. Let's do – so the premise of the game is that if you have – everybody is Muppets in one of your favorite movies except for one person. Let's do it a military-themed game of that. So basically, if you took your favorite movie, recast it into a Muppet movie, except for there's one human.
Okay.
Let's do a military movie. Which one do you think would be good?
Wow. Probably Top Gun, because I just think the Muppets flying all over the place with those helmets on would just look funny, because it's really intense dogfighting. And then to see Tom Cruise talking to Muppets.
Who would you cast as Goose to the Muppet?
Wow. Goose? Probably Big Bird.
Okay.
Right?
Not a bad. I would have gone with Beaker, so when he's crashing, he'd be like, burr, burr.
Okay, that works. What do you guys got?
By the way, I was imagining that like hot scene, you know, where that, but it's with Miss Piggy. Yeah, I can totally take my breath away. Oh yeah.
You lost that love, England. That would be so good.
Yo, and you got Kermit the Frog just like in the door looking sad as shit because he lost Miss Piggy again.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I could totally see that. Mine would be, I would go the fun route. I would do the movie Stripes.
Okay, that would work.
Yeah, with Bill Murray would still be the human, but everybody else would be Muppets. And yeah. I just feel like that would be a fun ragtag group.
Yeah. I mean, that's what he did in Space Jam, essentially.
Yeah.
So that would work.
You're right.
That's a good choice.
Formula works.
I have two. I'm going to actually use a user-submitted one for the first one because it would be hilarious. Full Metal Jacket.
Oh yeah.
Oh, my.
Who's playing What's-His-Face?
Arlie Emery? Or Joker?
Both. I want to know both.
Well, who's your human?
Arlie Emery, for sure.
You're keeping Arlie Emery.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Because him just screaming at
Elmo? At
Private Snowball could be Kermit. Yeah. Just getting screamed at. I don't know who would be. I know. Fuck. You could have Pyle could be Snuffleupagus.
Oh, yeah. Pyle is totally a Snuffleupagus.
He's not a Muppet. Big Bird's not a Muppet either.
Oh, you know.
You're right.
Yeah, that's good. All right, you're right. So I guess Goose has got to be somebody else.
Well, we're putting unique spin. Which Sesame Street characters would you put in?
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. All right, I got.
But my real answer for me would be A Few Good Men.
Okay.
And the only Jack Nicholson would be or Nicholson would be the one that stayed the same.
And it's all Muppet.
That'd be great. Yeah,
it would definitely be Kermit would be Tom Cruise. I think you could have Ernie could be the second lawyer that's there. Miss Piggy would be Demi Moore.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm just picturing Kermit saying you can't handle the truth. It just doesn't.
You want
disappoint.
The truth?
Well, you'd still have him. You still have Colonel Jessup would remain the same.
Yeah.
I want answers.
Good stuff.
All right. So, Cons, this week you had an issue that popped up that reminded you of some things that you didn't miss in the military. What's that about?
So, as a, you know, as a command, a leader in the military, a platoon leader, and then especially as you take command, you are in charge. You sign over all of this equipment. So all of the rifles, radios, vehicles, everything is under your name.
Mm-hmm.
And if one of your soldiers, one of your NCOs loses something, ultimately it is on you and it affects you because that's going to come out of your paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And if you lose, you know, night vision goggles or something, those are expensive. So that's why in the military we take...
Those are really expensive. Those are like over $1,000.
Oh, yeah.
So that is why
it's a nat security like violation too if you lose it in a war zone.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And actually, that happened to me, not to me, but a neighboring unit when I was deployed. But anyway, that is why you will see commanders go to such lengths if something is missing and will completely shut everything down because ultimately they are the ones that are going to get screwed.
Yep.
Now the reason I was reminded of this horror was because this past weekend while I was away at West Point, I allowed my commanding officer to stay at my place,
mm-hmm.
and she had a friend stay there as well, and they lost my keys.
Ooh.
To my apartment. So I was leaving for to come into the city yesterday, and I didn't have keys. Luckily, my building was able to get me a new set right away. But I was furious at them because we're not talking about 18-year-old PFCs. We're talking about grown adult women. And if you cannot keep positive control of keys, now get it. I get it. People lose things all the time here and there. But keys, to me, are something you really should never lose. You should never not know where they are. So I was extremely heated because I am at a point in my life where I shouldn't be affected by, I'm going to say it because they don't listen, the stupidity of other people.
So, I'm going to send her this clip.
So it really irked me that the irresponsibility of others ultimately affected me when I did nothing wrong, reminded me of what it was like to be in the military and have millions of dollars of equipment trusted to you. And now I'm done screaming.
I gotta say, it's weird to hear you going off and then look down and see your pink pineapple socks. It's a big contrast, man.
Kate, is there anything that you don't miss?
Two things. One, freezing my ass off during I hate being cold, and there were so many nights doing like overnight training stuff where I was like, this is it. I just hate being cold. And the other thing is the hurry up and wait. Like so much wasted time in the military. My God, if you're not doing like legit planned out training and you have those kind of in between weeks, you're not doing much, but you're not allowed to go do anything else.
Right.
So it's kind of just like
it's annoying.
You're stuck in this one little area. You're coming up with dumb shit to do because there's nothing going on. It's like, I could be at the beach, man. Come on, just let me go. Like, or like the end of the day when there's this cartoon that I don't know who did it, but everybody's formed up outside and like they're just waiting on the commander and they're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And he's just like playing Minesweeper in his office. Like there's just nothing like, but just those times where we would wait for hours and hours and hours. And then finally someone would come out and be like, all right, you guys are good. It's like, shit. Oh my God. Just let me go.
Could have let me go 3 hours ago.
Yeah. So
I agree with your being cold thing, but I mean, I'm not a cold person at all.
Yeah.
But worse than the cold at night is worse whenever you have your first formation for the day when you're in the field at like 05.
Oh, it is so
the
cold.
The moment of getting out from like your sleeping bag.
Oh, yes. That's the worst.
Yes, that is bad.
God damn. Because you're still wearing your camis from yesterday. Everybody looks disheveled as shit. You walk out and there's like 100 people out there that you instantly hate.
Yep.
you just don't want to see them that early in the morning ever. And you immediately have to start doing dumb shit because your company gunny or whoever has been up since 4. They've had like 8 cups of coffee because they don't have to do anything at night. There's no fire watch or anything for them. They're like, hey, I didn't get any sleep either, but I'm feeling all right. Let's fucking get it together, double dog. Like, shut the fuck up, dude.
That's a bad feeling, too, being the one that's on watch when it's time to yell revelry, because I'm such, like, I'm a people pleaser. I don't like to, I'm like walking through the revelry, revelry, wake up, like shaking the tents gently. They're like, scream it out, come on. I'm like, oh, I don't want to. I don't want to be that person.
Give me 8 damn Marines right fucking now. Give me 8 Marines. Okay, good. Give me 12 Marines. Okay, every fucking Marine here. Like, God, just shut up, dude.
Yeah.
Just shut up. We're not doing anything for another 4 hours. We can't even go hot. There's fucking lightning within 5. This is stupid.
Yeah. It's the worst, too. Another thing, like, stuff out of your control. Like, when you're on the rifle range, you just want to get the day over with. Like, and then, like, a rare bird will land back behind the tent. They have to stop and wait. Yeah. Like, all right.
We got 2 pigeons behind target 9, 2 pigeons behind. Everybody stand down. Unload, show clear. Like, God, no.
Yeah. Just make this day end already. Yeah. Oh,
but
my gosh.
But I do like it when it's kind of raining a little bit on the rifle range. I think that's the perfect condition because usually when it's just lightly raining, you don't have a whole lot of wind, so I think you shoot better when it's a light drizzle.
A nice mist.
And you're not hot. You're going to be cool all day. You're going to be soaked anyway because you're going to be sweating your fucking dick off or tits, whatever you have. And whenever you're laying there in the mud, you can just lightly piss yourself, and it's no big deal.
I keep waiting for this to turn into an ad read. I'm like, he's going into an ad read. What is it?
No, we're done with that. There's no more ads. We could have ended the podcast like 15 minutes ago.
I was waiting for you to be like, that's why I wear blah, blah, blah.
That's why I wear Tommy John, because even when I piss myself at the range.
That's why I wear the pins. Yeah, Tommy John's a good ad read there.
You could piss yourself at the range.
That's yeah, they can dry so quickly.
Perfect.
But yeah, pissing on the range is an all-time move. Because
I've never done that. Never crossed my mind to just piss myself at the range. No.
Well, on like the Marine Corps rifle range, because we shoot a lot further than you guys do, because we actually take pride in being good shot.
Okay.
So we, if you're at the 200-yard line, you have to walk back to like the 700-yard line to go to a port-a-john. That's a long walk with all your gear and shit. Yeah. You got to be all right, back I get on time. It. So if you can just sit there whenever you're already in the prone, and there is no – imagine now, because you're using iron sights, you want to be relaxed whenever you have, like, good trigger control, good discipline. There is no – there's two times in your life that you're incredibly relaxed. One, when you come, right after you come, you're super relaxed. Two, after you let off a piss that you've been holding in for a long time.
That's a good point.
Once the last little drip comes out, you have that sheer relaxing – that's when you're in your positive mental attitude is right there.
PMA.
You have good breath control, good sight control. You just lean into it a little bit, adjust, 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 squeeze, squeeze, squeeze. Fire. It's on the retreat.